Welcome to Beyond the Wild podcast, where we go venturing beyond the gear, beyond the subject, beyond the shot, to find the heart of wildlife and adventure creative. Beyond the Wild podcast is brought to you by PictureLine.com, your online source for everything photography. Listen in as we welcome guests from all specialties of wildlife and nature photography. Share tips and tactics learned from years of journeying into the wild. Your hosts are Jason Loftus, Ron Hayes, and myself, Mark Raycroft. Let's begin another episode of Beyond the Wild.
It's been a long time. I mean, barring the last podcast that we did, it's been a long time since the three of us have had a conversation on air until a week ago.
Yes. That's a fact. Yeah.
And we have no idea what Mark Raycroft has been up to. I mean, right. We can see that he's been doing some gardening. If you are watching on YouTube, you can see that behind you. That plant was just a sapling the last time he was on, the last time we podcast together.
It's my jade fro. I cannot keep up. I mean, we brought him up last time, Jared Polin. I can't keep up with that fro, and I do, and I will bring out the wigs again, but I don't have it at arm's reach. So this is going to have to do. And I am constructing a fabulous. Well, my aspirations are that it will be a fabulous backdrop with lights and a new neon sign came a few days ago.
Oh, you got it.
Oh. Well, the one I ordered, but not, I mean, we have to talk about that other one if it's coming too. I mean, I get how many neon signs can one have in the background? So
I'm looking at YouTube and I don't think a guy can have too much neon.
Right. It's smart to look at the popular channels and see what's trending. That's what I've been doing, the setups, and try to emulate that. But it's tricky because you want a certain amount of space. And I've set up in the corner of one of our rooms, a studio. I'm working on it, but with the MacBook, for the right framing for this lens, I'm only getting 4 feet of background or three or four feet behind me. So it's not, I have to figure out the scale and I have this backdrop I purchased. I didn't spend enough on this one. I'm going to have to work on something else. But if I move beyond 4 feet, I can see the perimeters of it, and then it's a bust. Everybody sees. So, you know, I've seen other very successful YouTubers in our genre that have like a whole room and cool lighting and neon and stuff set up. So I'm working on something like that. My point is it's coming. In the meantime, the jade has to do, right? Yeah.
I like the jade.
I've got the cool LED strip lights. These bar lights on either side.
I think if you turn the lights off, threw some LED in the jade, dude.
Now we need to start over.
Yeah. And I don't think you even need to know how to press a shutter button as long as you have enough neon and the LED going off.
That's the trick.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I've been watching them and it's a bit of humor. One night last week, I decided to try and set up a YouTube channel. And so I did it. I have a YouTube channel and I put up a 7-second video as a placeholder. And will this work? I mean, I've worked on other YouTube channels in the past, but never started one. Mm-hmm. So that was fun. But yeah, it's a work in progress. Lots of learning.
So welcome to Beyond the Wild.
Is that where we are? Okay.
We'll get a little pre-roll.
Yeah, for sure.
Myself, Ron Hayes, Jason Loftus coming to us from Utah. Jason, you've been quiet. You have no fro, but you are horny again this week.
Yeah, I'm working on mine too. Let's just put it that way.
And let's just say that didn't come from previous conversation. You'll just have to watch YouTube to figure out why that came up.
There you go. I like it.
It will, you'll understand immediately. We're just off center a little bit.
Just a little.
So Jason, you've been hard at work in and out of town, right?
Yep. Been doing a lot of traveling and you know, the good old job still is a requirement for me, and yeah, it keeps me busy, but it's also what allows me to do all this fun stuff as well. So I don't complain too much, but it's been a pretty hectic a month or two. So haven't been out shooting much the last month or two, but boy, do we have a lot to talk about from the previous year.
Yeah. So it was a quiet season, but
yep.
So back to, well, the other thing that we do need to talk about is, in a week, we'll be traveling down to our sponsor Picture Line in Salt Lake City, Utah. And we're going to get some, video to introduce those of you that aren't in the Salt Lake City area. Pictureline.com is actually our sponsor. They've got a great online business, and we're going to get you some behind the scenes footage of their operation as well. While we're there and having some meetings, so that you guys will be able to see the staff and see what Pictureline has to offer. It's a great operation and in a unique place, right at the foothills of the Wasatch?
The Wasatch Front. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
So I can't wait to do that.
Talking to a professional photographer friend of mine this last week, and he told me he's been going to Pictureline for the whole duration of his career and has been very happy, customer service excellent, and he's always purchased his gear there. I didn't know that. It just came up when we were talking about the podcast, so that's always good to hear. When you hear that kind of unsolicited comments to anybody, any part of the team, it's great news. So
absolutely. So the last conversation we had, Mark grilled us about a trip that we took last spring to Svalbard, which was a trip of a lifetime. But like we were kind of jabbing each other about there before we actually kicked off the show, it's been a while since we've caught up with you, Mark, and heard it. I mean, we all get those incredible visuals of what you have going on, but sometimes you don't know if those are archived or if that's, you know, the present day. And I know you got some incredible workshops going on, but you've also had some great times to get out and shoot on your own over the last year.
Yeah.
So we're gonna pick on you tonight.
You go for it. I think I was asking you questions like the audience would last week. I was curious about Svalbard.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, what a cool part of this planet and the experience, and to do a live aboard boat for a week in the Arctic like that. I mean, yeah. How can you not be curious?
So if anybody is interested in Svalbard, get a hold of me as soon as you hear this podcast. If you're interested in going, there's a 2-for-1 special, which works out to about 5,000 euros per person. To take the same boat that we had. It's a little bit different time of year, a couple of weeks after. This will be in June of 24. There's an opening, and if it's still available, I will put you in touch with the company that took us and get you on your trip of a lifetime.
Yeah, price is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Really, what an opportunity. And I think, I mean, I, you guys can educate me on this as well, but a year ago I heard that there's some legislation potentially brewing in Norway and Svalbard about, is it the Zodiac use that hasn't been implemented yet?
So it's small boat use. So what the governing bodies want is just for large ships. So they don't want the small boats to be able to go out anymore. So it would basically... it would prohibit you from being able to get any kind of anywhere close to an eye level shot, or to even get into some of these fjords, you know. So they're looking at all big boat traffic, the small tour operators and the ecotourism that goes on there plays a big part in the economy for the island and for several individual companies. And those smaller boats. And I think it would be a shame to take away that opportunity from people. because the big boats can't get you anywhere near where you need to be. You know, it's unfortunate, but yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
Well, with that being discussed, if people are considering it, then, you know, it's been something that's been on my mind. If it's possible to do it sooner than later, just to have that opportunity and privilege, because eye level photography, I mean, you can do landscapes, you can do from a distance, as that polar bear approached the ship for you guys. I saw all kinds of amazing images and video of that. But it's still, that's another opportunity to be eye level in the Zodiac. So food for thought, if you're listening to this and something you're considering doing. Photo tours has become more and more a part of my life and business model, and totally love it. It's a thrill to share all aspects of a wildlife photography trip with enthusiastic guests, and they're wonderful. You know, it's a happy space for people to be in and to be adventuring in the wild. And as a host, as a guide, there's always that pressure of performance, of finding the animals in great situations. And it's a huge relief when that happens. But I love doing it. And I'll go into that in more detail in a little bit. Right now it's quiet. It got late enough. They've shut it down for tonight. We have great horned owls right at the house here, have for years, and they've got enough of a population. We have two that nest about 40 yards from the house in a white pine, and they've started their mating season. So just after dark, the hooting goes on and on and on, and goes a couple hours, and then it stops. But it's wonderfully distracting to hear. Mm-hmm. But it's a annual phenom to have them here at the moment. So I have wanted to show you guys, since we haven't touched base on my camera gear, what I've been shooting. And this is where people watching YouTube, obviously the audio podcasts are great as a standalone too, but on YouTube you can see my new equipment. And I've switched. I mean, we all know, I was watching last night on a different YouTube channel, Petapixel, I think the guys, and they were talking about the new Samsung S24. Is that right? There's another letter, I think. But the new Samsung smartphone and the photo capabilities. And we had one of our guests. That's one of the collaboration and sharing on photo tours is so much fun too, the social dynamic part of it. One of our guests last year, Erica Squires, had a Samsung, and she was just teasing us with what she was able to do with that in the field as far as B-roll and filming, documenting caribou and whatever else happened to come by. But as we know, cameras are becoming more and more compact. This is the Ultra Mirrorless. Yeah.
Nice. And
it's built-in flash.
There is something in there.
Flash isn't silent.
It is.
There
not.
Is a mirror in there because I can see our faces on
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I can see right. us. Yeah.
I couldn't resist this. I have probably $5 or something. I think it was in Alaska. I think I've seen them in the Rockies as well. It's a little tourist thing. But as a photographer, right? You're on a photo tour. You're the guide. You're the esteemed guide. Everybody is, you know, wondering what they're going to learn from. And you pull this out. And yeah, it's good for a laugh.
I'm a dork. I love those little trinkety type things anyway. So those little, you know, so
right.
I'm going to have to find me one of those. Yeah.
I could send you this one, Mark.
Yes. Is that the new 1200?
The big glass. No, this is this is the 400 2.8.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very nice.
Mini R mount.
It'll shoot the pure dark.
2035. And this is what we have.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'll shoot in the pure dark. Oh, it will. Yeah. It's got absolutely. Its own light. It's got its own light source. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You don't even need to use the noisy flash.
Right.
Beyond the Wild is super advanced. These guys in this podcast and their gear. Another joke one. And I'm sure a lot of people have seen these. And if they haven't, it's something to think about finding out there. Because again, for $10 or $20, I think you can have a lot of fun, is those coffee cans, right? Of the lens. Mm-hmm. So it's like a Nikon or Canon lens, but it's a coffee mug.
Yes,
yeah, Jason's right got there. One right
Jason's
there.
Got it.
So I have one. I took it on a couple of trips just to be prankish and to make jokes. And so I had, I would wait until, you know, somebody's walking around the corner of the trail and I would have my arm up with it and then throw it into the bush. Just to see the look on their face. Or another really funny one was I would have them walk up to me and I'd be like, you know, something's wrong with this. Would you have a look at it? And I'd toss it to them purposefully about a foot short so they couldn't catch it. And it would hit the ground. I am a nice guy. I am. I'm not, but I mean, how much fun are those for what they cost, right?
Yeah, I have to be careful. Mine has a blender in the bottom for mixed drinks.
That's fancy. Dang. Which brand was that? Was that Canon or Nikon?
It's Canon. That was definitely Sony. Of course,
it's a Canon.
Oh, wow. Blender one. Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. All right. You can make your ice margarita right there.
Well, Mark, what are you really shooting nowadays? Has it changed at all? I mean, you were back in the day, right? You were kind of. You were kind of deciding if you were going to go away from Nikon, maybe shoot the Canon.
You did. Go away from Nikon and shoot the Canon.
Where did you land? Yeah.
Well, I've landed back with Nikon, but it's a fun, quick story because both wonderful brands, right? And I mean, so much equipment nowadays is significantly superior to what's been in the past, leagues ahead of what we can do with photography, and Sony's another brand that is kick butt amazing. We know a couple of photographers that shoot Olympus and love it. Still a couple. Mostly Canon and Nikon. The Canon R5 I picked up because Nikon mirrorless was lagging behind, and it was on a previous show with you guys. We talked about that, I think. But the reason was they just weren't good enough for what I wanted to make the switch. I was happy with the D850. It was a great DSLR, still is. They're still selling it, right? And it's the sensor is fantastic. The price point is great to get into it. Obviously, mirrorless cameras have superior capabilities for what you see is what you get when you look through the viewfinder. The autofocus improves, is consistently improving with firmware updates, especially for the high-end models. I love that about mirrorless. It's the fact that these companies are supporting them for years and continuing to keep their flagship or their serious amateur slash pro cameras at the cutting edge with firmware updates. But that with Nikon had the Z6, Z7, Z6II, Z7II, and I know they were decent. I was hearing positive things from colleagues that had them, but not enough to make me switch from the 850. And then I bought the R5 and the 1-500, which is still a big go-to, obviously, for so many people out there. I see that combination, that light kit all the time, and I loved it. There was nothing wrong with it. Enjoyed the differences between Nikon and Canon that way. But the quality, I never saw anything that would create a negative comment at the R5 at all. I did have to get a second R5 because the first one failed, but that can happen to any piece of technical gear in the field, just out of the box. But what happened was the Z9 was announced. I was in the field filming Caribou and picked up on the announcement and thought about ordering it, but at length watched YouTube reviews because, of course, they're held back, right? Some of the pundits or the popular YouTube channels have access to this gear before it's released and film it, test it, and then the day it's released, they can come out with their videos and get tons of traction because everybody's curious what this new gear is like and what the capabilities are for the price point. And the Z or Z9 was fantastic, but the reviews didn't sway me to switch from the R5 at that point in time. And it took four or six months of firmware updates, and then I could see it catching up, and to the point where I felt it was on par capability-wise with the autofocus with the R5. That wasn't what made me switch over. It was the announcement of the 800. 6.3 PF telephoto, yeah. super zoom telephoto lens. And that is physically smaller than the 600 and is hand holdable and at 600 F3. So I mean, the trend, you know, for the last half dozen years, environmental portraits, small animal, a big landscape. There's a lot of interest in that, a lot of drive in that composition of photography. But we still, I love the close-ups as well, or the reach. You know, I used the 800-63 for mountain goats this fall and had this wonderful rock face that they were up on. There's no way I was climbing up there, wouldn't be capable of doing that. I know it's wonderful when we can get up in a situation and have the Grand Lakes landscape behind them and the animal close, but that wasn't accessible in this situation. So I was able to, with the 800, get some great scenes with this huge rock face and the mountain goats. And the other thing too is on the Z9, it's the same sensor size, very close to the R5 at 45 megapixels. And as I've mentioned before, the crop cropability, if that's a word, the ability, here we go, English 101, the ability to crop in is amazing on that sensor as well. I can make a vertical out of a horizontal and still be a bigger file than we had in original cameras. Now, the 850 was also up there, the 45, I think, megapixels. 45, so not much, not much change there. But so it was a combination of the 800 millimeter 6.3 and that made me go back and buy this for Nikon. So I bought the Z9 to put on that, but I kept the R5 and I was using that as my zoom setup. And then I had the big telephoto setup for the reach. And it's not the other thing about a super telephoto like the 800 or the, or a 600 with the 1.4 TC teleconverter built in. It's not just getting a close up of an animal, but it's the ability to stay further away at times and an animal will behave more naturally. The more distance we are from many subjects, they'll go about their behavior. And in this profession, behavior still sells, right? An animal's doing its own thing, whether it's sparring or having a drink. You know, if an animal's watching somebody, it's maybe not going to be relaxed enough to do that. Or curl up and have a sleep like a fox. The further we are away, the better opportunity to capture behavior. Or there could be small subjects like a cubs, bear cubs, that this just helps pull them into the frame because we don't need to be or want to be that close to them. Or they're aggressive or shy animals. So the telephoto, super telephoto has a lot of uses, not just, you know, the typical close-ups that come to mind at first, perhaps. Mm-hmm. But I had that combination kit and really thought, because I was used to both systems, thought that I could go back and forth in the field at the same time. And it proved to be a challenge to be shooting one and then just switch quickly to shoot the other and back and forth. And part of it was just the fundamental turning of a lens is the opposite direction for zoom, for instance. And so I decided to sell the R5 and the 1-500, and none of it was due to quality of any component of it, and just go back to pure Nikon, which is what I had been for 25 years anyway. And I've always been happy with Nikon. It just, they got, I mean, it was public knowledge that it took them a bit to get back in the game. But I'm really happy with what I have now. They came out with the 180-600 this year.
That's a beautiful piece of glass again. I mean, they did it with the 200-500. You're the reason that I switched to Nikon with that D850 and 200-500 setup. It was a reasonably priced piece of glass. I mean, and it took beautiful images.
I think they kind of screwed
themselves at that. Yeah.
I still think they did that by mistake because that piece of glass was so dang sharp and so good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think we would find, talking to people, that later versions of it may not have been as sharp and as clean as those first run ones, you know, but
really, but I never heard that. The 2-5.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely. Oh,
wow. Interesting. But
the 180-6 is as sharp as that 2-5 was from what I've seen from people.
It's better. Yeah. The reviews are better. It's, and, So yeah, it's the replacement for the mirrorless for the Z lenses. Mm-hmm. And it's a similar thing. It's a tiny bit more expensive, but it's nowhere near what most lenses cost. You know, I purchased the 1-400 a year before, and that's what I was using for my telephoto. And I've switched to the 1.80-6 as its internal zoom, which is nice as well, and the extra range. But it's, what did I write it down here as? Yeah, it's 2,300 Canadian. I mean, for that lens, which is what?
$50
US. $50 US, right? So, you know, really, for the that piece of equipment, you know, I have people messaging me on Instagram and stuff asking that, you know, and it's like, why? I don't know. It's a no-brainer.
Yeah,
if you're getting into this game, into this passion of this hobby, mm-hmm. that's a great lens to get in with for the price point. And so I love that. So that's what I'm using as for larger mammals is the zoom, and then the 800 is what I carry.
So do you have two Z9s, or did you grab a Z8 when they came out with that one?
I have two Z9s. So yeah, my friends, were making, that's what I traded. I traded the R5 and the 1-5 in on another Z9. Mm-hmm. And yeah, my friend, Yaron Eni was making fun of me this fall, calling me the Z18. Yeah.
That's actually pretty good.
So we've got a workshop in Minnesota for loons, and the first year that I was out there, it was right after the Z9 came out, and nobody could get them. They were having trouble with getting enough bodies out, you know, production wise. And this guy had three of them on the boat. He knew the right person, whoever the right person was, he knew him. And anyway, he had three. So he's Z27.
Was he selling them?
A lot of people jealous. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's a great camera. And one thing, when you're reflecting on the Z8 versus the Z9 options, very similar cameras, but the Z8 is a little bit cheaper, obviously. If somebody has smaller hands and is a smaller person and doesn't want the bigger Z9 housing and weight, then I see the interest in the Z8. But I like the Z9. I mean, it just fits like every other pro camera I've had for 25 years was that feeling. And mm-hmm. I love the feel of that camera body. But something to consider is the battery life in the Z9 is way better than the Z8. So the Z8 batteries are smaller, like similar to the R5 mm-hmm. size batteries. So it's a matter of having a little waist belt of them kind of thing to be switching if you're on a long shoot, whereas the Z9 typically carries me through a day anyway on one battery. And I have backups of those too, but that when you buy the extra batteries, it almost gets you up. And if you decide to buy a grip for the Z8, then you're up to almost the price of the Z9.
Did they do the same thing with the Z8 that they did with the 850 and give you the opportunity to buy like the Z9 battery to go in the battery grip? Or does it just have two smaller ones?
I think it's the same as Z8. I mean, I haven't actually held a Z8. I have a friend who got one last year. I haven't seen one. I think it's just the same kind of port that the 850 has, the one battery that goes in the grip.
And like the Z9 battery?
No. No, because the Z9 battery is big.
What they did with the 850 is it costs you like an extra $1,000, but then you use the Z9 battery, or the not the Z9 at that time. It would what was the flagship?
It was the D5.
And so you're using that same battery,
maybe.
Yeah, you'd use that same battery and it would give you a lot longer battery life. But
oh yeah, when you had that thing in there, I'd go days without having to charge. Yeah,
definitely. So it's the same. The Z9 has that same large battery that all the big flagship sized housings have had. Yeah. So on the 850, but that would require the grip because it wouldn't fit.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You had to have the grip. Yep.
Right. So it's like that with the Z8. If you purposefully want a smaller camera physical size reasons, then it makes sense. Otherwise, to me, the Z9, by the time you bought the extra batteries, is the better
option. Same price point. Yeah.
It's very close. Yeah. And I think they'll always, it makes sense, logical sense to me that they always favor the Z9 slightly firmware over the Z8 because it's the flagship. It's so there might be advancements in the firmware that, you know, might lean toward the Z9. I haven't seen that yet, but I believe that would probably be the case too, because you're paying for it, right? You've got the most expensive camera they put out. So, I love the gear and, it's all I can carry. So that's what I've been using.
We saw you in Colorado. That 800 made a huge difference.
Oh yeah. If you can't approach something, like even on the boat, right? That reach.
It would have made a huge difference on the boat for sure. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we don't ever talk about this really, but for us, we were really trying to figure out how we were going to get all of our big glass over there, right? Because we knew we might have to reach out. And so having lenses that are 800 millimeters that are smaller than, you know, the 6 and the 4 even in some cases, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that makes a big difference for when you're traveling and doing stuff like that. So, yeah.
Yeah.
No, it fits well. Yeah. I think it's smaller than the 5.
It's smaller than the 200 to 400. I know I saw one in
it's lighter.
It's a lot. Yeah, it's pounds light.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But and the price point, all right, it's still expensive, but it's not in the ballpark of, and I think there was one YouTube, I don't live on YouTube. It's just a source of reference, but there was one YouTube video that I think ranked the 800 at Nikon's third sharpest telephoto lens behind the 600 F4 TC, the new one, and the 400 2.8 TC, which are both $20,000 price point. If you go between US and Canadian, it's over that. I think it's 22 in Canada. But I think the 800 was 9,000. So it's still a serious chunk of change, but for what it accomplishes compared to the other lenses out there, it's a favorable price point. Because even the 5s and 600s before that, you know, the S series lens, the 6.4 or the 500 F4 were more than that, right? So I believe, I know the 6 for sure, I think the 5 was as well. So that's what brought me back, because biggest lens I ever used prior to that was a 5 in my career. So the idea of having an 8 on a 45 megapixel sensor, that was just like kid in a candy store capability wise, right?
Yeah.
What we could do.
Where have you been taking it?
Oh, everywhere I go. Is that how you fill the time?
Well, we know you had, you brought it all to your whole kit to Colorado when we shot deer. But we know you've got some other things going on as well. One of which is, you know, it's kind of like the Svalbard trip. Everybody that went with you, I see their images pop up every once in a while, and they talk about it the same way as Svalbard. You know, oh, this was a trip of a lifetime. Couldn't believe what, never would have expected to get what we got. And you see the images, and you would think these guys had been doing this for 30, 40 years with the images that they got. But with your expertise and your knowledge of the area and behavior, these guys had a great trip. So tell us about the caribou trip that you have put together.
Yeah, if you could just, we've recorded this, right? I can use that and put it on my website, the promo piece.
Sure, absolutely.
Well, we love doing it. Yeah, I was going to go in chronological order, but let's talk. There's not much more before caribou, so let's talk about caribou. And I mean, I've learned to love caribou, the experience, the environment, the elements they're in, and just the creatures themselves are so interesting. And 2 years ago, Pilly and I wrote the book on caribou, and that's available everywhere. And from that, it was kind of the stepping off point from that. I've been filming caribou the whole duration of my career whenever opportunity presented itself. So, you know, 25 years, well, maybe not. maybe 20 years. I've been going into caribou country on and off. And Newfoundland is where our photo tours are based out of. And I've been going to Newfoundland since 2002 and done a tremendous amount of fun assignments there that involved various species. And caribou were always on the list, a woodland caribou, the subspecies that's found in Newfoundland. Mm-hmm. And they're extremely photogenic. And it's a matter of finding them. And it was a challenge for decades. You know, sometimes I get lucky, put in a lot of miles, driving, walking, hiking, and glassing, all of it. And sometimes you'd find them and get lucky. They're a fun animal to photograph as far as approaching them, depending on the situation. But after doing it all these years, we found some areas where we have been very confident in. We've learned the land by hiking a lot and fairly confident in finding the herds there and decided to share it with people, not just for the business side, but for the fact that I wholeheartedly believe that everybody that's joined us has walked away and fallen in love with caribou from the experience. I mean, there are other species we see, moose, very frequently. We see foxes very frequently as well. This year is a fantastic year because one of our areas had ended up, it was a cross fox there for 2 years. It was a solo female and she had a litter this year and there were three colors. Of course, the dream was three together. I never saw that happen, but there was a silver fox was the father, so all black with a white tip on its tail, the cross fox mother. And then I had two kits, which was a traditional red fox color and then a silver fox color. And just to see them, right? I mean, again, how do these animals of this level of beauty exist? And and watching them hunt and play and sleep and stuff in their environment was a big bonus this year and has been for the past couple of years. This will be our third year offering the caribou photo tours. They have gone exceptionally well and we love doing it. Again, just to share it with the caribou behavior and wildlife photography and the elements. I mean, it's Newfoundland, right? It's fall, so it's comfortable. There are no bugs. It's through the month of October for the rut. And so activity is high, and the transformation of the landscape, there are large tamarack trees that, which turn a yellow gold there, which when we're finding the animals in interior forests and stuff, make for exceptionally colorful backgrounds, but they move a lot. And it's a wonderful challenge for me and Pilly, she helps a lot. We don't locate them right away on a given day because they can be, you know, 5 kilometers, 3 miles away overnight. You know, nothing says they're going to be where we found them yesterday. And we, you know, so we'd split up and head in different directions and have radios and try and find them. And with wildlife photography, which is why we all do it. We never predict what any day will deliver to us, right? The experience is we know if we don't go, nothing happens, right? But if we go, how often are we surprised by something amazing? And it doesn't have to be grand or big. It can be something small. You know, I saw my first male cardinal 3 days ago here. Love seeing that in the winter, a red cardinal. So with caribou, it's like that because they're in an environment, a landscape that has a variety of situations for photography, which makes it very dramatic and exciting. And the weather in Newfoundland is very changeable. So the opportunity over a course of a week to have beautiful, rich evening light or overcast light with colors or moody light or fog, typically we get all of it in a week, including, I keep my fingers crossed just for the sake of our guests experiencing it. Usually there's one day a week that can be, you know, 50, 60 mile an hour or 80 kilometer an hour, 90 kilometer an hour winds, which is an experience. You know, but there, they may have tuckamores or these stunted evergreen shrubs, which are through part of the landscape. And it's incredible. The caribou, unlike other ungulates, they don't mind the wind at all, right? It's the world they live in. And you know, moose, which inhabit these same regions, will be in the forest through the daytime. Unless we're going through the forest, we don't see the moose unless it's beginning and end of day, because they seek shelter in there. But moose are big, right? So moose don't mind bedding in the forest. And if a predator walks up to them 10 yards away, well, typically they can get up and get out because they're big. Caribou don't like bedding where they can't see. So they'll bed right on the open landscape, even if it's that windy. So it's amazing. But then you can stand up, you know, not with a camera in hand, but lean into the wind and it will support you. It's fun. So one day a week, I hope for that to happen, for the experience. Mm-hmm. But what I was getting at with the wildlife unpredictability of any given day, things happen. And I don't want to do a monologue for 20 minutes on you guys here. But our first week, there was magical events every week last year. We do 3 weeks to encompass the window of the rut. And we take 4 people per week to keep it intimate, to keep it small, for maximum experience, maximum interaction with us and with the animals. And the animals don't seem, when we find a herd, you know, they're good with the number of people we have typically. And so that's how we lay it out, 4 per week. We're sold out for 2024. Word of mouth has been fantastic. We haven't had a guest we didn't thoroughly enjoy having on these trips and sharing. It's been wonderful. 25, I think we have 3 spots still open as of today. We haven't done anything for 26 on caribou yet. So other than when we take names, but soon we'll roll over. But yeah, there's still an opportunity for 25. Some wonderful people signed up for 25. You know who you are as well. But on this day, it was interesting because it was first week. Again, magical things. I could tell a story from each week last year. But on the first week, there was a really unexpected experience where we were following a herd of caribou, and it was late afternoon, overcast, and they were going through a forest, and they kind of disappeared into a trail. And it's like, well, do we want to keep going? And I mean, the right answer always is yes. I mean, there was still daylight, so we decided to follow them at a distance. They were ahead of us by 5 minutes, and we ended up following them, and we found them in another clearing, maybe half a mile away. And they're milling about in this clearing. And we're doing some photo ops with when they lined up on some rocky scenes or with the tamarack or larch trees or little ones of those in this clearing. And which was still great photography, but nobody, including myself, knew what was going to happen next. And with the rut, with all these, just like other antlered animals, there's satellite bulls that are around that are hoping for the opportunity to breed a female at some point, but they're not mature yet. They can't challenge the herd bull to take over the position of the harem, which is what caribou form in the rut. Females all come together around the most dominant male, and other males can come in and defeat him and throw him off for a day or two or more. But in this situation, on this afternoon, there were 2 or 3 young bulls, but significantly smaller than the herd bull, and none of them were going to displace him. And they ended up heading over this little forested ridge. And I didn't really look far enough to think they were going to do this, but we followed them again. And when we came through the trees, there was a small lake and they'd gone in it. And the one, the larger of the young bulls, the satellites, and he's probably a 3-year-old, but it was nowhere near the size of the big guy, had chased a couple of the females into the lake and had them going across in a different direction from the herd, which caused this kind of confusion and excitement and panic in the herd. It's like, where is he taking them? You know, as you could see them, all the other cows looking, and then the herd bull is like, he doesn't want to lose these other ones. And they ended up swimming around this lake. And usually they'd be in the water, from my experience of all these years of working with caribou, you know, they might be in the water 5 minutes. They cool off. They love to swim. They're super strong swimmers. I mean, it's amazing to see when they accelerate, you know, their whole chest can kind of come out of the water. And they seem to really enjoy it. So they might be in for 5 minutes. And so it's one of those things my most one of my most exciting scenarios to find them in, to photograph them and mm-hmm. film them, try to do both. Mirrorless cameras is another high five for the technology. Just hit the button, you know, to switch from stills to video is fantastic. But the point of the story is they ended up being in this water, in and out of it, on the shore, on this lake. And in Newfoundlanders, to the just to make sure I say it correctly, it's a pond. All lakes are ponds. So they're in this pond for 45 minutes. So they gave so much opportunity to photograph them and videotape them and, you know, do some smartphone stuff if they came close enough for that. And then even at the point where we all collected so much imagery that we just sat back and watched them, and it was all around an incredible experience. And it's just one of those things that no matter where you are and you're in the wilderness doing your wildlife photography, you just don't know when something marvelous will happen. And when we're guiding people, it's even more of a thrill just to look at the expressions, you know, they're just,
that's what I was. Yeah. I mean, you alluded to it earlier, the pressure that people don't necessarily think about, the pressure that you put on yourself when you're doing one of these trips, because it's like, you've got people that are paying you to take them out and to have this opportunity or capture these images of a lifetime. And so a person with any scruples whatsoever puts a lot of pressure on themselves to make sure that those opportunities come about. There are tour leaders out there that are just taking people's money and they never have a repeat customer. But, you know, the images that I've seen from your tour, you know, take a couple things from that story you just told. Number one, there's one of those clips in our intro clip. You can see an image of the herd bull swimming, right? Mm-hmm. And then, secondly, I had something else that was really good, but it's escaping me right now. So, Jason, I'm going to have to turn it over to you while I think.
Well, I mean, the whole idea behind these trips is to go out and have a great experience, and not just to capture images, but to also just have a great experience. So anytime you come across a scenario like that, right, where you can just, you get your images, you get your video, and you get an opportunity to live life outside of the viewfinder and just take it in, man, I'd live for those moments. And more and more so, I find myself doing that, right? Just pull my head out of the viewfinder and just, you know, got a lot of video and images over the years, and sometimes it's nice to just have that moment to yourself and to whoever's there with you and just enjoy it. So, you know, when we can have that happen, it's successful.
Yeah, exactly. That was the other question that I had. And it is a question for the audience is, what generation would Mark be in that he would refer to it as videotaping?
Did I say it that way? Well,
yeah. No, but back. you're absolutely right. Yeah, it does go back a ways. But I think that's the biggest draw to these hybrid camera systems is, you know, the flick of a switch, you're shooting video. And as long as you're paying attention to what you're doing, it can be pretty seamless, and bringing the images, you know, the still images to people just captures their imagination, but the video really tells the rest of the story as to exactly what you were experiencing. And I think the opportunity to do both, you know, we've talked a lot in the past, Mark, especially you, because you pretty much made your living providing images and stories to periodicals and that sort of thing. And the change that came about with the availability of this great equipment that people have access to was that, you know, they didn't necessarily want to buy all our images anymore. They wanted to have these experiences for themselves. So to be able to take advantage of both and provide the experience, but also provide the expertise, I think is something that definitely fills that void that was left in your annual income, but it also, you know, you're helping people live their dreams. And I think that that is the rewarding piece that comes with the worry that we talked about making sure they have the good experiences, getting mm-hmm. to see them excited when that sort of thing happens. They get to experience something that maybe they never thought they'd see.
Yeah, if our society didn't revolve around money, it'd be what I'd choose to do with people for free.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
It's to share that, and I mean, they all become ambassadors for Caribou by having this experience and telling their stories. I mean, most people haven't really thought much about Caribou, mm-hmm. you know, and populations are all in decline for the most part. There's issues coming, more and more issues surfacing, actually, but it's but they're amazing animals, and then to cope with the environmental changes through the seasonality that they live in, and the biology behind that, and the magnificence of the bulls or stags, and the cuteness of the calves. There's so many layers mm-hmm. to this. It's very fulfilling. It's my favorite thing to do each year, is to take people on tours like this. And So to segue quickly, we have a new tour this year. And Ron will be joining Pilly for this year on the tour. That's the current plan for muskox. We're adding that. And muskox is only a 1-week tour, but we have access to an amazing camp in the far, 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 far north of Quebec, Nunavut, and it's connects out of Montreal, but will be, it's been in operation for a couple of years as a muskox destination for photography. So it's well laid out. The owner is fantastic. And so we actually have secured the best week for color traditionally. And so very excited to add that to our photo tours for this year. It will accommodate 7 people, and it's anybody who's interested can reach out. 2025, we've already filled, I think we've got 4 of the 7 filled. Yep, we do. 4 of 7 already. There's still space in 24 and 25. We actually have a few people for 26 already too, although we haven't done anything formal about registration on that one quite yet. But that's a very exciting landscape to be in. And there's 2 or 3 herds around this camp, and photo opportunities and experience. And then, you know, not just the muskox, but the northern lights are very common any clear night up there. So that'd be a lot of fun to visualize, experience, sit under with your campfire and film or video. So there's a lot of elements to this. It's only a 1-week trip. And again, we have the best week. So it's very exciting to be announcing that. I haven't put it on any socials yet or advertised it at all. I just sent messages to a few people and they signed up, and I will send an email out to our other clients from the past, but I'm putting that out there because we still have spaces, and it's a great setup well laid out and planned out mm-hmm. as well. And then I also do elk rut stuff, but that's pretty full at the moment too. But I love sharing that. That's a very dynamic experience and a favorite of all of ours mm-hmm. too. But I love doing tours. And it's funny, the first tour when we did the first week, I wasn't shooting as much. And I love this the psychology side of it, to try and make all the different personalities of people happy in the tour. Mm-hmm. You know, some people, we've had guests who aren't photographers, who just, you know, were in their 70s and were up to it and had never seen caribou and wanted to do that in this lifetime and did well. We've had quite a few guests in their 70s and have loved it. But the photographers that have come, I believe that almost all of them have left with portfolios that rival mine after the week. Everything from silhouettes, and that's fun. It's either early or late. I like evenings in a way better, because in the morning for sunrise, you're out there pre-dawn whenever it's clear, and try to find the animals. That's, you know,
right. Try to find them before you have enough light to see them. And then, yeah. And then it seems like, you know, the movement overnight puts them to bed. So your time with the behavior tends to be a little bit less sometimes in the morning because they've been working all night. So they're, once the sun comes up and it warms up, they're ready to lay down to take a nap.
And it lessens, like the intensity of the sky lessens. So you kind of, I mean, it's still fine. You can still underexpose it and make it work, but it's just something about the, at sunset, it just gets richer and richer and richer. And even times where it thinks like it's too dark, it's like, no, it's still doable. Right.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of fun laying on the tundra elbow to elbow with other photographers and doing that this year too.
And evenings are sometimes better, especially when you do have northern lights, because you might be up till 2-3 in the morning.
Right. You get to sleep.
Which we found multiple nights when we went on our
We haven't talked about that yet.
Nope. That's another one coming. I know.
But yeah, that no sleep stuff, I was praying for rain a couple evenings. I just needed sleep, but it was, you didn't want to miss anything. So.
Right. Yeah. That's it. Right.
Yep.
Yeah. It's a lot of effort, you know, and it's something I've come to appreciate with seasoned guides as well. It's just over a few weeks, the stamina, because every day you want your clients to get the most they can for their time. So every day is a new day. Energy's got to be, you know, on day 17, the same as it was on day one. Right. And make it work. So it's a fun challenge. Keeps us young.
Yeah. People like Tim Irvin and the group that we went to the Arctic with, Swain and Jeanette and Jens. I mean, the stamina that you're talking about is not just physical, although it is, but the mental stamina to just be in the present all the time. And like you say, week three, week four, they're doing these trips back to back to back to back with different groups of people. So there's a different psychology for each group.
Yep.
So.
Well, you just don't fake that passion, right? I mean.
No, you can't.
You got to have the passion for it, or you won't be the same on 17 as you are on day one, you know? So that's another key reason to find the right guide, the right person that is going to make that experience good for you. So.
Yeah, that's a great trip, Mark, and can't wait for the fall to see how that turns out.
Yeah, me too. So yes, fantastic. Just jump back on Colorado. I want to tell a little story on that trip.
Depends. Who does it involve?
No, it doesn't. It's a live and learn story.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. I think I know where you're going. This is a good one. Yeah.
Unexpected. Yeah. Totally. Right. So, you know, if you happen to, Denver's a big city. If you're staying near the airport, you know, pick your hotel carefully. Or actually, let's back up a step. When renting a car in Denver, have insurance and don't, resist getting a Kia Sportage and make sure you have insurance. So on day two of being in the area, and I was at the hotel on the end of the strip. So I don't know if the hotels on either end are more vulnerable, but this was the one closest to the city. And I was just naive, you know, what am I missing?
Well, not necessarily, because there's 150 other vehicles there in the parking lot, right? And they didn't all disappear. So it wasn't naivety. Well, it was just bad luck.
It was interesting. It was bad luck, but it was also probably the only Kia Sportage in the parking lot, right? Which apparently is the easiest to steal. And when I arrived at the airport, pick up my rental car, it was like 10 p.m. at night. And I was like, you know, just give me the car. I have coverage through my credit card. I don't need extra coverage. And, you know, thankfully, all that seems to have been turned out okay. But I wouldn't have taken the Kia. I would have had a different option for that because Denver's one of the worst cities in the United States for vehicle thefts, apparently. So on the second night, you know, I parked the car. I'm on the, I think it was, yeah, fourth floor. It's only four floors in the building, right in front of my window, in front of the main entrance, off by maybe 40 yards to the left, bright light. And the next morning I wake up and I open the window, the curtains, to look out and see, confirm the weather's clear and coldest morning out there. It's going to be great to do the drive and do some photography. And I look down and the only empty spot in the parking lot was where I'm sure I parked the night before. I'm like, what? Looking, and it's just utter confusion. But it's like, is my mind foggy? There's absolutely no reason for my mind to be foggy. Where's the car? Like, I parked there. So I even got the fob. I'm hitting the fob. No lights flashing anywhere. It's like, okay, something's wrong. So I go down to the front desk, and it felt like I was just asking her for another room key, because I said, I think my car's stolen. She, oh, yeah, yeah, okay, okay. Where were you parked? So just out front. Oh, she says, that's weird. They usually take them from the side of the building. I'm like, okay. Does this happen very often? Oh, yeah, we had one taken last night too. I'm like, oh, this is fantastic. You know, so yeah, it was first time this has happened to me, and it was shocking. Not a big deal. Got to roll with it, right? Worst things can happen by far. So it's, you know, I'm not sweating it, but it was, yeah, not easy to get in touch with the rental car company. They were open. They wouldn't answer their phones. So I had to take a shuttle to the airport from the hotel, and then take the airport shuttle back to the rental company and spoke to the supervisor, who processed things very quickly. But thankfully, I took a photo of the document, handwritten document, to report the stolen, or the theft of the vehicle with the rental car company, because the supervisor never filed it. I got a memo, you know, a month later saying, you know, nothing's ever been filed. There's no police. Everything was done well. I mean, the police was there before I went to the airport. Within an hour, he was there. And I thought he was going to come up to the room to get specs, but he just called me, which is cool. Called my cell phone, took my address. And when he, you know, from Canada, he's like, oh, hey, okay, welcome to Denver. He said. So it all got resolved. I got a different rental car. I threw the extra insurance on it because I didn't want any other hiccups for the week or think about it. Because when I, of course, getting the next rental car, the other person at the car agency said, well, you're staying at the same hotel? I'm like, there's a good question, right? You wouldn't be. Mm-hmm. But I got full coverage on it. So, you know, I've already reserved this room and everything's there. One tip on this stuff.
I was going to say, make sure. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, is, you know, I left my boots and I left a nice down vest in the car just because my arms are full, but I almost left more. And now I won't leave anything aside from a wrapper in the car. It's just, they're too easy to break into and steal. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And is that what you're thinking?
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. I mean, you get complacent photographing in these less populated areas because you just don't have the same level of crime. And, you know, you might leave a video tripod in a car. That's 10, 15 grand if it's, you know, with a good fluid head on it. But you always think of taking the cameras in, but you don't always think of taking the tripods. And so Mark told me the story, and I was like, I would have made four trips if that's what it took to get everything up to the room, but I was not going to leave anything in the car.
Yeah.
Just because you can't afford to lose your gear when you're flying from Toronto to Denver for a shoot. So,
yeah. Well, you have limited days. You spent the money on all the other components of the trip, mm-hmm. and, you know, you're there to, you know, collect materials of some sort. You don't want any compromise or to be out money too that way, right?
Yeah.
Even if it's a claim on equipment, there's still, you know, most equipment insurance policies have a deductible, you know, it could be $500 or $1,000 you're out too. And so it's worth carrying, and rental cars and situations like that, carry this stuff. Don't leave anything in it, right?
Yeah.
I missed that vest. I get surprised how many pictures I look back on. I'm scrolling through stuff, trying to grab things for social media. I'm wearing that vest. I got a replacement that was is pretty good too, but still, you never know, right?
It could have been your good luck vest.
Stop. I didn't think of that. No, I've had luck since, so that's thankfully good. That's not
must be case. Your underwear.
I don't know. My buddy Dave often talks about that being a good luck charm, right? Anyway. Yeah. I won't say his last name just in case it comes back to embarrass him. Yeah. Pink is the way to go, supposedly. Yeah, I also want to throw in there, you know, we're going to Australia once a year anyway now with growing family over there. And just food for thought for those people thinking about it. It's a common subject when it comes up, Australia and New Zealand and amazing places for anybody who's into nature and wildlife on this planet, seeing very accessible, great people. And the bird life, like in Australia, where our daughter lives, is just, it's like being on another planet. It's like being teleported in Star Trek to another planet. And I mean, not only are the cars coming down the other side of the street, right? So something's
off.
Right. But, it's so good though. There's so many elements of it. The pace of life. I mean, it's the coastal regions, but the bird life is so colorful. And so the songs, the sounds, it's amazing, the experience. And so I highly encourage people contemplating Australia and New Zealand. Australia, be forewarned, in our winters, their summer, and it can be very warm in areas in the summer there. Whereas New Zealand's more temperate that way. And they have cool animals too, the marsupials. Mm. Yeah, shout out to my super friends, Mark and Sue. We talk about this stuff all the time. They live in Australia. Mark's a great photographer. And wombats. Who knows about wombats? They are little, cool.
Yeah, mm-hmm. A little bit. Not enough to...
These little fur balls. Yeah. And, you know, some of this stuff on Instagram, I saw a lady hiking on one of the islands where wombats live. And, you know, the wombat walked up to her hiking pole, short, stubby, stoggy little dudes, right? And backed up and was rubbing his butt on her hiking pole. Just, you know, it's hilarious. But one of the, I had a page open. I could do too much of a segue here. I know I'll try to not. But one of the most fascinating aspects about wombats, you gotta Google them. Even on, do it like hashtag wombat on Instagram and see what they look like and their behavior. Guess what shape their poop is.
That is a segue.
Yeah,
right. They poop cubes.
Really?
Cubes.
That does not seem anatomically possible.
Right? It's hilarious. I mean, how does this evolve? And speculation is because on the open landscape, round droppings will roll away, and this is how they mark their territory. So the squares don't, the cubes don't roll.
Yeah, and I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I buy that one because
it's true.
Natural selection would have taken. I mean, you got to get a rectangle pooping wombat and a square pooping wombat together, and maybe there's a round poop wombat somewhere along the line. And what, do they just shun them?
Yeah, must have been. This is the evolution. So I'm on Wired.com website. If you look at wombats, it's the creature feature 10 fun facts about wombats, and feature number. I mean, this should be feature number one, but it's actually feature number eight. They have cube-shaped poop. Wombat poop is square. They mark their territories, this is a quote from the website, by defecating. And it's thought that the shape of their poop keeps it from rolling away. Special bones in their backsides allow them to squeeze and form their feces into cubes. So, and here's something. There used to be giant wombats, an ancestor of today's wombats, which are, these little guys are like, I think the size of like a rugby ball, right? A football.
Mm-hmm.
Their ancestors, there were giant wombats, the size of a rhinoceros that lived during the Ice Age. And the oldest wombat, this is the 10th aspect of them on here is 29 years old. So, and Australia's got such amazing wildlife. I mean, koalas, there's so many elements.
Koala, wallaby, kangaroo, several of the most deadly snakes in the planet.
True.
So
giant spiders. Yeah.
So I just Googled wombat.
Okay.
Second thing that comes up under wombat is wombat poop.
Right.
So apparently these little square nuggets are fairly popular.
Right.
Or at least the story of how they do it is fairly popular. That is insane. It looks like they would have to poop them out and then just sit there and shape them. It doesn't seem like they'd be able to do that. Don't spit that water out on your microphone.
Yeah. No, you would think that. How is this possible? So, I mean, beyond the wild, here we are. We're beyond photography. This is our educational component, our animal segment today. Wombats.
In particular.
Question mark. Or coolest poop on planet Earth? Question mark.
Oh, that's hilarious.
But all joking aside, I mean, that's fact. It's fact. But all joking about that amazing species, I mean, Australia is, I'm taken aback, and just the bird life there is amazing, as other components. And in the coastal regions, you know, the sea life, there's so much to experience.
There's a guy that's got a pretty good he's got a pretty good YouTube channel. I enjoy watching him. He does a lot of reviews, but he gets out in the backwoods, or what are they, the outback, and finds these just unique species. Jan Wagner, I think is his name.
Yeah, I was watching one of his this afternoon. I was just pulling it up.
But he does a lot of, I mean, there are so many unique species. Australia, you think of, That's the first thing that comes to mind biologically or ecologically is the uniqueness of the species that are found there. I mean, the platypus, you don't need to say anymore. Mm-hmm. You got a mammal that lays eggs.
It's alien, man. It's got to be an alien with a introduction.
Duck bill. Right.
Right.
You took a little bit of everything and just stuck it together. And there's all kinds of species down there like that are just unique and no other trace of them anywhere else on the planet. Mm-hmm, so even if they're, you know, at some point, even if it was all one continent, they and all went not to even the same spot.
By Australia tourism, right?
right.
We're not.
Not yet.
Yeah.
Not yet.
Yeah.
When they hear about the wombat poop story breaking on Beyond the Wild, they may change their tune.
You heard it here first, folks.
Well, it's interesting.
Yeah. It is interesting, actually. Yeah.
Jan Wagner, his very popular YouTube channel covers a lot of photography gear, but he's extremely passionate about being a bird photographer. So you want to see the 31 flavors of, you know, Australian ice cream bird colors. It's you can watch his YouTube channel and very quickly get a sense of how colorful and varied the species are. And his name is spelled J-A-N and then W-E-G-E-N-E-R. It's a very popular channel, and he does a lot of reviews on when new equipment comes out. Yeah. A lot of Canon and Nikon specifically as well.
Awesome. Well, that's only 1 year, Mark.
Yeah. No, and this year is even more packed. It's like this is editing season, and this is with mirrorless cameras. I love the technology, as I'm sure the majority of you that have them do as well. But one thing that's changed is the editing process. It's like a whole new layer of just going through the volume to select the preferred image or two. It's, you know, I mentioned this to some people and they say, well, dial down your frame rate. And there are times I do, but you know, the whole point is if action happens just then, you want that frame rate. You want the 20 frames a second.
The next frame might just be a little bit sharper than the last.
Well, there's that too.
Be the perfect one, yeah.
Right? Yeah, when you're hand-holding a big lens, and that's a factor. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's I'm weeding out thousands of pictures from a card that wouldn't have been there in the past. So it takes that much more time. I'm, you know, just as happy or even happier with the end result, with the constantly evolving Photoshop and Lightroom capabilities, and how they keep being updated, and the new tools are fantastic. And I see that all across social media. I mean, there are some real masters out there at editing. And
it's not just the new software that's coming out. It's the software that we've all been using for decades, and just the improvement within that software, and the AI, the artificial learning that's going on with software and training itself. And I've found myself going back, you know, 2012, 2013, and just re-editing some images. And it's like you took it with a whole different camera. It's insane what today's advancement can do to decade-old pixels. And so I would encourage y'all, if you have the downtime and you've gotten through the shots that you did this year, go back and just take a look. Or, you know, and the other piece of that is you just improve in your editing capabilities over time. And so going back and taking a look at some old images, you might just bring something to life that you forgot about, you know. And that's what I've found on the downtimes when things are a little bit boring or I'm stuck at home. It's just kind of fun to go back and revisit.
I'm dying to find the time to do that. There's so many images that I would love to start the process over again. That's great. I mean, really, you can revive and not just the pictures, the images that you edited back then and you know, were highlights of that time, but ones that you might not have,
that exactly. can now be
recovered and added to the portfolio. So yeah, there's a lot to be said there. You know, it's one of those things where I think about, you know, do I need any more images? I've shot so many. I mean, I took 140 some thousand images this fall. It's like, you know, I'm obviously my goal is to take a couple thousand out of that to use the market. But it's, we still have to keep living our best lives, right? And my happiest place, aside from sharing time with loved ones and friends, is being in the wild with wild animals, and photography facilitates that. So I want to keep shooting, and whether it's with a big telephoto or an action camera or a cell phone, or just sitting back and listening to the sound of the breeze in the pine trees, you know, it's a matter of being out there. So we have to do it. And that was one of the things I wanted to mention was, you know, Instagram is a fantastic tool. It's, you know, from where I sit, for photographers, the best branding tool out there now. I think it's still really imperative to have a website if a business is what you're doing. If you want to grow a business, to have that material behind the Instagram. But the other thing about Instagram is, honestly, there are so many fantastic, amazing photographers out there having experiences of a lifetime that they're generously sharing with us. But it can also be kind of overwhelming. It's like, wow, they're so good, you know, between the cameras and their effort and their talent as artists, that they're so good, and it can be discouraging for people. So, you know, the fear of missing out, FOMO, F-O-M-O. I mean, it's like it makes people rush, perhaps, but it also takes people and stops them from doing it, because a bunch of people have done it so well, but this is a life that we share. So I just wanted to encourage people to, you know, enjoy that content, but you try and keep it as motivation and get out there. And when you have your own experience, it will be unique for you. Irrelevant. I mean, the photos are important. I don't mean irrelevant of them, but there's so many other aspects of it besides the end product of the photo, like Jason was saying earlier. I mean, it's being out there. It's being active. It's being in the fresh air. It's, you know, not being we're 2 feet from a screen so much of our lives now. It's breaking all that, and it's keeping us healthy to do it. So keep living it. And the other thing I was going to mention as part of this in a way was another very popular YouTuber, Peter McKinnon, did his New Year's post, this YouTube clip at the beginning of January. And it's easy to find. It's not a very long one. But he summarized his career, which has been, it's just incredible what mm-hmm. this very motivated and talented young man has done with his career on YouTube and as a photographer and as a content creator. But he mentioned back, it was 2013, he'd published his first two-page spread in a magazine and said he'd got $300 for it and thought he'd made it, you know, and it's huge, you know, huge feeling of accomplishment to do that. And he did it in a very big magazine too, and all that. But nobody, I think the summary, the synopsis of his video is that nobody came banging down his door for his work, even though they saw this amazing image. That to, and his message, which really was solid, was everybody has to do it ourselves. You know, you have to knock on the doors. You have to be your strongest advocate, you know, and promote your work and go forward with your work and with life and these experiences. So get out there, have the experiences, but then depending on your desires, you know, not everybody needs to sell pictures financially. Not everybody wants to, but for those that do, you know, want to do more with photography to make it happen, you know, and the internet's a great resource. You can type almost anything into search engines in the phrase of a question and, you know, get some kind of directional answer too that helps with things. So it was, you know, for somebody with his success, I thought it was a great clip because, you know, he went back to the beginning and showed what he accomplished in 10 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when one wraps their mind around it, I mean, it's huge props to him, but it can be done. And the platforms keep shifting, you know, his success wasn't in publishing. I mean, that area is drying up. It's, you know, we hear more and more publications struggling for various reasons, but he did it on YouTube, and there's all these shifting platforms and ways to be aware of. So yeah, it was something to check out and something to think about and to motivate hopefully yourselves out there. I mean, it's a magical planet. I mean, we got wombats out there doing their thing.
Square poop. You
know, there are all these species doing crazy cool things all over the planet, some close by, some far away. Get out there and see it, explore it. Take your camera.
And I just want to real quick, Mark, you asked a question that made zero sense to me. Like, should you still be taking photos? Yeah, the answer is yes. And not for all the reasons you mentioned, but do you really ever have the right perfect image? I mean, I don't feel like I still have.
That's the beauty of photography. There is no perfect absolutely. Image.
No. And right. If you feel like you're there, I mean, you know, we all are going to just keep shooting no matter what. But if you do feel like you're there, challenge yourself, you know, go out and shoot for the day with just a 24 millimeter or something crazy like that. Right.
That's cool.
Try to take a different approach at it or whatever. Right. If you're getting in a funk. You know, I have people reach out to me and ask me if I ever get into a funk with my photography or my editing or whatever. And it's like, yeah, all the time. You know, I feel like I've hit a brick wall. I'm not progressing or whatever. And the answer is, you know, challenge yourself, do something different, you know, only go out and do really tight shots or something or whatever, just do something different. And it'll spur the creative juices and get you to think differently. But yes, no, there's never enough photos taken.
Thank goodness for big memory cards.
Absolutely. Yeah. Free memory. No, well, the memory's not free, I guess. But technically, it's pretty much take as many images you want for free.
I have a 64 terabyte drive that has only 12 terabytes of space left.
Oh, man.
Oh, left. Okay. All right.
Yeah. So I'm going to be getting rid of some videos. So if anybody would like to buy some shaky stock footage –
Shaky stock.
That's an element of adrenaline rush.
Right. You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll have some available. Multiple nice. Species. Not guaranteed to be in focus.
It's those are great points, you know. And the photo taking is a vehicle to be out there experiencing wildlife mm-hmm. behavior.
Absolutely,
too, right? There's yeah. always that, and I always it never gets old.
Yep,
agreed.
Well, so it's been great. This is thank you for asking the questions today, and thank you to the audience for thank joining you. Us on our second episode of Beyond the Wild podcast. You can find us on YouTube. Our podcasts are recorded in videotaped format as well as the audio, which is on all audio platforms as well. Please share the love of our show to friends that you think might be interested in it to help us grow. That would be much appreciated. And follow along on Instagram, subscribe on YouTube, if you would, please, to help there as well. We're trying to get traction and get growing. And thanks to PictureLine.com for sponsoring Beyond the Wild. And you can find more of our stuff coming in future episodes. We're recording our third one next week. And I'm looking forward to hearing about Alaskan coastal grizzly bears fishing for salmon and making, honestly, some of the absolute best images I've ever seen of that behavior. So tune in to next week to hear about how that was accomplished and the stories that go along with it.